You're listening to a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, dedicated to bringing podcasters together for the greater good of gaming. It's sort of like Voltron, but with better lip syncing. Find out more at dicetowernetwork.com.
Another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 131.
131 episodes of the Family Gamers Podcast. I don't know why I repeat it every single time.
You do every time.
Every single show I repeat whatever number it is that you said. So you could say the wrong number, I wouldn't even know, which is probably the best part.
It's my job to know the number, it's your job to repeat it.
That's fine. There we go. That's fine. You know, teamwork makes the dream work, right? Anyway, 131 of the Family Gamers Podcast. As always, I am your host, Andrew, and I am joined by my lovely, wonderful, and currently laughing at me wife, Anitra.
That's me.
And it's an odd-numbered episode, and this episode, I mean, we're already laughing a lot. This is going to be a funny show, I think.
I hope so.
Because we are really, really lucky to have with us a guest who has created a game which is hilarious.
Yes.
And it's our joy to welcome to the show Tom, Claire, TC. How are you doing today?
Yeah, good. Thank you. Thanks so much for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here.
So you have created this game called The Champion of the Wild.
Yes.
This game is ridiculous. just to paint the picture for people, I'm looking at the cover of the game, and we have a track, like a running track. And on this track, there is an elephant who is... You know, in the back,
he's in
fifth place because elephants are apparently slow. But in the front, there's a horse, a lion, a polar bear, and a dolphin. Oh, and is it an emu or something? What is that? Is that an emu right there?
Yeah, it's an ostrich.
And the dolphin, of course, has his water lane of the running track. But all
they're
these
doing hurdles. These, too,
oh, and there's hurdles. Well, the dolphin would be better at the hurdles, I guess. But
the elephant would be bad at the hurdles.
Yeah. So, what is going on in this game, The Champion of the Wild?
If you look really closely as well, you can see a gorilla doing javelin in the background, but that's just something for...
There you go.
So, basically, this is based in a world, Andrew, where it's probably based in about 2005, 2006, so kind of about 12 years ago, humans discovered that there were certain children that were growing up that found they were able to communicate with animals in a kind of perfect way. So they could understand what the cat was thinking, and the cat could chat back to them, and that kind of that generation of young people, well, actually they were kids before that, but when it got to about 2006, that's when they became adults, and this generation of people that could communicate with animals started up kind of a range of different careers. You know, so you might what would you do if you could communicate with animals, Andrew? What would be your career choice? How would you make your money, make your wages if you could speak to animals? Do you think?
I kind of like what Steve Irwin does. Feel like that would be a pretty entertaining job, you know?
You could definitely work for a TV company doing, like, choreographing stuff with crocodiles like Steve Irwin and, you know, that sort of thing. Or, you know, you could be a pet interpreter. You could make a lot of money kind of telling other people what their cats and dogs are thinking. Anyway, so this...
I've actually wondered about translators. I mean, how frequently are they actually translating what the other person is saying? Because the whole point of a translator is that the people that are talking to each other have no idea what the other language is, right? So,
yeah.
Like, do you actually need this skill in order to be able to become a pet interpreter?
Well, no, but it's a fair point. You could set up as a... And in fact, that happened in this world. There was a load of false pet interpreters who were just pretending that their dog was happy all the time, and saying "I love you" every time they barked. And the idea of the game is that at some stage, one of these people that can speak to animals discovered that there's quite a large proportion of animals, like humans, who like to be involved in competitive sport and want to kind of have an elite, want to be an elite sports. I was going to say sportsmen and sportswomen, but sports animals. You know, they wanted to be competing at the highest level and having the world watch them do races and kind of physical events. And so then that developed into what we then call the Champion of the World, which is the kind of world championships of these physical events. It's kind of like the Olympics, but for animals, really. But the crucial fact about it that makes a social card game out of it is that the humans, we as those who can speak to animals, as the players of the game that can speak to animals, we are the coaches, and we're there on the sidelines trying to maximize our animals' performance in the range of events, which are obviously some of which are 100 meter hurdles and, you know, those sorts of Olympic events. And there's some other more unusual events in there, as I'm sure you've found.
Oh, yes. The first time we played this game, I think the three events that we went through were the egg and spoon race,
the
break dancing, and then the 5K steeplechase, which, you know, was legit.
Yeah, we've also talked about the supermarket sweep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I forget what it was called, but the Eurovision, but with animals.
Yes.
Animals. Oh yeah, yeah. So that was
team
called
performance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it's Zoolavision, because I didn't want to use Eurovision because of the
implications.
Zoolavision.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And then so the individual dodge, which you dominated as the hummingbird.
Well, you know, the hummingbird is well suited for dodging.
Right.
That event is literally designed for the hummingbird, isn't it? That's what they were born for, that event.
Right.
Pretty much.
I don't know if, I guess I'll just quickly say how the basic game works, because it's... I think the interesting thing about it is that it's not just about one of these games, you know, what would be best. You choose one animal with the event. It's not like you say it's 100 meters, what's the fastest animal in your hand. It's three different events that are all chosen at the start of the game. So, and they're from different categories. So you might have a speed event, say the 100 meter sprint. You might have a power event, which is a different category that might be something like the Royal Rumble, you know, like the wrestling event where you throw other animals out the ring.
Yep.
And then you might have, say, a team event, which is where more than one animal of the same species compete in a team. And that might be, say, animal stacking. So you've got to stack your rhinos or ibexes in a tower, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And then in that moment, you've got those three events, the 100 meters, the Royal Rumble, and the stacking. And you've got to think, from my hand of seven animals, which one can I choose for all three events? So the thing that makes it interesting from a design perspective is the fact that you have to compromise. You can't just choose. You're not going to have an animal that's going to be winning all those events. And so you have to come up with some interesting and inventive strategies to think about how best to maximize your animal's performance. And that's where a lot of the fun comes in the game.
Yeah, I give a quote for the Kickstarter, and I think I said something to the effect of, this is the best way that I could use my ridiculous dad logic. So there's 60 cards across five different categories. You have three people that you know, choose a category and then take the top five cards and then pick one or something like that. That's kind of how we did it. And once those are displayed, everybody's got to pick their animal in secret, and everybody flips them all over at the same time. And then you kind of have to negotiate your way through all these events and explain why your animal... You have to give the reasons why your animal is the animal that is going to win. And it's completely ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly. And there's also, you know, there is... It matters because the difference between winning and lose or winning and coming second could be between finishing fourth and fifth in your weak event. So it matters. You know, if you can stack three rather than two of your elephants, then that could get you the victory if your other events are the ones that you've won. So it really does matter, even in your bad events, to come up with something, maximize your points, really.
Right.
Yeah, I learned that with my hummingbird, because we had supermarket sweep, Zoolavision, and dodge.
Yeah.
And, you know, he did okay. He dominated the dodge. He did pretty well in Zoolavision. And, yeah, after I made lots of arguments for why he at least wouldn't be last in supermarket sweep, he was last.
Right.
Because he can't lift anything.
The first time I played this, I chose the bald eagle because America, right? And I thought I was going to do really well in the 5K steeplechase, but one of the things that is really interesting about the game is that there's all these kind of accommodating rules, because some things can fly and some things can swim and some things have to be in water and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so there's like six different rules for flying. The one that was chosen for the 5K steeplechase was the animals could fly up to the height of the tallest animal competing.
Yes.
Which seems legit.
Competing.
The problem was the tallest animal competing was a gibbon.
That's not very tall.
And
I don't think an eagle could fly that low.
And so I was making a really great case on, like, I mean, the eagle would be fine and all this stuff and wouldn't even get bogged down by the water. And then one of the clever people that we were playing with pointed out that the eagle had to be like 6 inches above the ground, and eagle's wings can't beat 6 inches above the ground.
Yeah, no.
Oh, and so I came in last for all of those.
Oh, no, you finished last. You know,
well, in that in the 5K steeplechase I did. But yeah, it's so much fun to have these tongue-in-cheek, ridiculous, logical arguments during this game. And that's pretty much exactly what you do for the entire course of the game.
Yeah.
Right? Because one thing I don't even think we mentioned is the way that you win is essentially with a voting mechanic that's similar to the way a lot of party games work, like Apples to Apples or whatever. There's a game that came out last year by Big G Creative called Happy Little Accidents, where you have to rank everybody but yourself. First, second, third place kind of thing. And the Champion of the Wild has a similar aspect where you have to give out the first, second, third, up to seven places because the game supports eight.
That's
you
right,
can't give yourself a ranking because otherwise you'd be first all the time. So you're handing out these voting tokens to say who you think would get first, second, third, fourth, fifth, etc. number of players minus one places. And yeah, so it's absolutely worth it to make your case to as many people as you think that will be receptive. Even if you know that it's completely ridiculous and totally made up.
Yeah, and it opens the door for things like where if you come up with something really, either just really funny, really hilarious, or really kind of clever, the other players might reward you for that by giving you first or second, even though they know that really, you know, your bald eagle's not going to win the weightlifting. But if you've thought of a really clever way of putting it forward, because it's a social occasion and a kind of, an experience, they will reward you for how kind of improving their how they've enjoyed the game by giving you a higher place. Yeah, so even just that aspect makes it all quite unpredictable as to who's going to win at the end.
So I have a critical question for you. This is kind of a dumb question, but I have to ask this. This is my lack of knowledge as an American.
Mm.
Is the Cooper's Hill cheese rolling event a real thing?
Yeah.
I know nothing about this, although I'm really interested.
Yeah, it is.
What is it?
It's probably...
It's exactly what it sounds like.
Yeah, it's probably the most dangerous regular sporting event that the UK holds every year. You know, it's like... It's that one where they have the bull chase them in Spain, but the UK version. Effectively, they find you find the steepest hill you could imagine. And you get a load of people at the top of the hill, and you have one of those big rolls of cheese, and literally all you do is a big wheel of cheese, and you just throw the cheese down the hill, and the first person to touch it wins. That's the only rule of the game.
That's astounding. How do they not do this in Wisconsin?
Yeah, I mean, if they do.
Oh no, there's not enough mountains in Wisconsin.
Yeah, if you look it up on YouTube, you'll find it on YouTube. If you type in Cooper's Hill cheese rolling, you'll find some pretty crazy videos of what happens.
I'm sure I will. What do they win for? You know, do they get to keep the cheese?
I don't. Do you know what? I don't actually.
Well,
know. I think they just keep the cheese.
So it's covered in wax or something.
Yeah, no, it is. It is covered in wax. I still don't think it's probably worth the risking your life injuries that you'd have to.
Well, obviously, but I mean, you got to reward this person with something. I mean, they give the guy who eats 5,000 hot dogs in 20 minutes something. So
maybe what I'll do. Maybe I'll contact the organizers and offer them a copy of our game for every year for the winner, in addition to whatever else they win.
Well, I mean, you'd have so many people on the top of the hill, like you wouldn't be able to actually probably added incentives. Oh boy, but no. So this is the game, the Champion of the Wild, and there's so many different. I mean, there's 60 events, and there's probably about 40 animals in this pile. I mean, this is a game that I don't think anytime we've played, I don't think we've ended up with something even approaching repetition.
Yeah.
there's a huge amount of variety in it. And it's ridiculous and hilarious.
Yeah, well, that's what it was designed to be, really ridiculous and hilarious.
So The Champion of the Wild was released last year?
Yeah, so it was kickstarted in September 2017. And then we went through the whole production process, and it was released October last year, 2018. So yeah, released October 2018.
And it's going back to Kickstarter again for a second edition, a second printing.
That's right. Yeah. So we're day five now of the 1 month, 25-day Kickstarter. Yeah. So 5 days in.
Mm-hmm. How's it doing?
Incredibly well. It's a bit of a shock, really. We're We've got about 900 backers now, and we're on about 20,000 funding for a 4,700 goal. So, yeah, really well. Really, really surprisingly well. Yeah, it's incredible. I'm shocked, really.
So are there, for anybody who might already have the game, are there changes with the second edition, or is it really just to facilitate a second printing of the game?
Well, no, there's quite a few changes, but we've kept it as accessible as possible for owners of the first edition. So there's a low pledge level at £3, which is about, I think, $4 for people who own the first edition to get all the new cards. There's going to be eight new animals, first of all, which means you can, even when you're playing with eight players, you have seven cards each. We're going to decide those as part of the project, so we're not quite sure what species they'll be yet, but sure, help us decide that if you're a backer.
Right.
So that's the first thing. It is there's five cards which are new, which are event randomizer cards. So they're just going to be literally, they're going to have the same card back, and they'll have different card fronts of the five different event categories. And the reason they're in there is that there are four new variants of how to play. In each of the variants, allows you to draft a hand of animals rather than just being dealt a random hand of seven. And then there's different ways of playing. So there's two pentathlons where there's five events rather than three. Mm-hmm. There's another triathlon, which is just a simple draft triathlon where you draft your team. And then there's a decathlon where you play three triathlons in a row and then one final event. And each of those, because you're drafting your hand of animals first, you need to have random events, because you can't have someone choosing an event knowing they've got an elephant in their hand, or, you know,
sure.
Yeah, so these, the five new cards are for that. So the people who back at that level for the first edition will get the new animals, the new event randomizer cards, and also we've already unlocked about 12 new event cards as well, so there will be some new events coming as well. But I think your question was it about why we're doing a second edition, or was it?
Pretty much. I'm trying to understand what the additional pieces were for anybody who maybe has the game already. But knowing, especially, that there's a tier where they can just get the add-ons is excellent.
Yeah, so at the moment we're going to have the rule book, which obviously is important for the new variants, is going to be available as a free download, definitely, for everyone. Mm-hmm. What we're looking at getting that as an add-on as well, probably for quite a low price, if we can arrange that for people if they want a printed version of it. Yeah, but that's all the new stuff. It's the variants, the new animal cards, and the randomizer cards, the new events.
Cool. So you mentioned that the add-on for somebody who already has the game is about $4. But what's the price for the game if people don't already have it?
For new backers, it's £23, which is $29 roughly. Yeah, and that's just gives you the new second edition, which will have all the original cards and probably some nicer quality components, looking at the way things are going with the Kickstarter. So yeah,
excellent. Cool. What do you know what the shipping is going to be? Because I'm guessing they're coming from the UK.
Yeah, so the shipping is £4 to the US, and it's a bit more to Canada, so it's £7 to Canada, because of the trying to do Canada friendly is a bit more difficult. And similarly with Australia, I think it's £8. But yeah, so US is £4 shipping, which again is about $5 or $6 on top of the
$29. Sure. Awesome.
Mm. So one last thing I'd like to ask you. You mentioned that there's a few new variants in the second edition.
Yeah.
It says here one of them is a new junior pentathlon.
Yeah.
To allow younger kids to play.
Yeah, that's right.
Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, of course. So this is interesting because, as I said already, that one of the really interesting things about the game from a kind of adult and a designer perspective is this whole three different events, choose one animal. And that's what gives it a lot of life, I think, for an adult group. But something we've discovered, and something that we didn't necessarily plan for at the start, is that it works really well as an adult game with that approach. But it also works really well as a family game with children. And once the kids are about kind of certainly 10 and above, maybe 8, 9 and above, playing that way is absolutely fine. But when you have younger children, age 5, 6, 7, it's more of a challenge to think in that way. So what we've done with this variant, with the junior pentathlon, is to have one variant where you choose one animal per event. So you'll draft a hand of five cards. You'll need to choose five animals that you think is going to represent all the categories. So you're going to need to have one animal that can do speed, one that can do endurance, one that can do power, one that can do technical, one that can do team. And you'll then go through each of those categories, which will be drawn in a random order, and you'll put forward one of your animals for that event when it comes up, and you'll then try and work out who's going to win and do the normal voting system. There's actually a live podcast version from PAX Unplugged that Shut Up and Sit Down did, which they just put on YouTube just recently, and that basically is a junior pentathlon. They've played it there, so if people want to see it, then they can look at that. So it does work with adults as well, but it works really well for children, because you just have to basically choose which animal's best for this event, and it makes the experience much more enjoyable and more even for younger kids, kind of 6 and above.
Sure, and less kind of negotiating and, you know, well, this is going to be good at one thing, but not so good at another. How do I choose?
Yeah, it's more about kind of managing. There's a bit more about managing your hand and making sure if you get the right animals at the start when you draft your hand, to cover all the bases, then you're likely to do better.
Right. It kind of aligns it in a more streamlined and simplified way, almost more like war through various events. Right.
Yeah, kind
of. Instead of trying to figure something out that'll strive between a series of them.
Yeah, and it's something I've been resistant to, actually, because as soon as you first mentioned the idea of a game like this, people assume that it's different animals for different events. And I've been quite resistant to that, because it's not, the thing that's good about the game, the best conversations you have are discussing when your animal is going to be awful at an event and how you might make them do a little bit better. I still remember from about 5 years ago, it was still a parlor game at the time, and my friend Oscar and I were talking about a giant octopus doing the 10-meter dive. And we just, in our mind's eye, just imagined for about 15 minutes just watching it kind of gradually roll towards the edge of the diving board. And then it would just finally just fall off and flop into the water. That image has remained a memory that we kind of go back to regularly whenever we speak. And that only happened because, he chose the octopus for the baking event, the cooking event.
I do have to say that I think the artwork in this game is really amazing. Whoever the artist is did a remarkable job of making pictures that look pretty close to real, but they're really ridiculous. Like I don't know what that is. Is that like
I think it's a gopher.
A gopher that's holding the spoon and trying to hold the egg on the spoon.
Oh yeah, that's a beaver
on a track.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a beaver. Okay.
Oh, I love that one. That's one of my favorites. Yeah.
There's a mosquito and a newt and a squirrel and an emu and I don't know, some flamingos or no, it's something in the water. Oh, an octopus setting up in blocks for the 10-meter sprint. They're remarkable.
Well,
they're hilarious because it's very tongue in cheek, and yet they're drawn to be serious.
Well, and it gets the idea across right away.
Right.
Yeah.
And it uses the animals to be the vehicle for the ridiculousness, not
but presented seriously.
In a serious way.
Presented straight. And like I love this one of the knight jousting on the orca against a guy, I guess, riding an elephant or a rhinoceros.
Yeah,
it's wonderful. Yeah. I could look at these pictures all day.
Well, I think so much credit has to go to Kevin Chapman, who's our artist based in the States, and I think there's lots of games that are like this, that are parlor games that people play with their friends and try and get them published. But if we hadn't found him as our artist, if he hadn't made that art piece of the jousting, if he hadn't brought the game to life as he has done, there's no chance it would have got to this point. It just doesn't have the same appeal until you see the artwork. So I really have to say thank you to Kevin for the amazing work that he did. And he spent about 3 or 4 months every day, all day, just doing new pieces of art. So it was a lot of work for him. So yeah, if he's listening, I'll just say thank you to him because he's been incredible to work with.
Yeah, I mean, it really does a great job in positioning the game as something that absolutely has this tongue-in-cheek humor to it, right? Because it makes the games present as, no, really, this is serious. I don't know why you're laughing.
Yeah, and I think, the art really, it transports you to the world where it happens, and it lets you think, do you know what? How would I stack my elephants in a tower? What actually would happen if you had a blue whale and an ibex and a bison all in a boxing ring and they were trying to get each other out? You end up having serious, quite in-depth discussions about the technicalities around just completely right. ridiculous things.
It's like us talking about cartoons or comic books and like, no, that wouldn't seriously happen because of this thing, you know?
Yeah.
It's very silly. I mean, I remember...
Joker would never really kill Batman.
Yeah, exactly.
He loves it. Yes.
I remember us trying to negotiate out what our what was it, Zoolavision?
Yes.
What our Zoolavision routines would look like, and trying to describe all of the various things that would happen. It was very...
And the glitter and the choreography.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
Why it would amaze you.
Yeah, they would come out to Toto, of course.
Yes.
That's the appropriate music.
Because they're elephants. Yeah,
right.
They're African elephants.
It was just very silly. It's a lot of fun, and it's really... It is entertaining to get the kids involved, and it's good to hear that there's some variant stuff coming with the second edition that specifically addresses some of that difficulty, because it's actually kind of hard for kids to make a tongue-in-cheek logical argument, recognizing their obvious fallacy, but completely ignoring it. It's actually, we found, at least with our kids, that they're not very good at that.
Mm.
Well, I mean, that's kind of a good thing, but it's also fun to work on that skill.
Right.
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing about it, is there's two very distinct experiences that you have with the game. There's an adult party game experience where everyone understands the depths of what their animal can do. And there's the family game experience when you're playing with children under about 10, which is different. Mm-hmm. You know, it's still really fun, but it's a different game. You know, it's a different experience. But all the families that every family we've playtested with seems to really enjoy it. Even if it hasn't got quite the same depth of thinking and strategy as the... Well, strategy is a very big word. What it is. It's not really strategy, but you know what I mean.
Right.
Yeah, and it's funny because we didn't really design... We didn't aim to have two different experiences in the box, really, but it just happened that way because it's quite... Kids like talking about animals, and you know, my kids just enjoyed getting the pictures out and just having a look at all the cards.
Well, we're having a blast with it. We're really enjoying just... We don't always need to have a deep strategic experience at the table. Sometimes we just want to hang out with our friends and have a laugh.
Yeah.
We have some friends that we really enjoy hanging out with, but they're not really gamers. And this is the kind of thing that we can bring to the table, and we can have a conversation around playing a silly little game. And we're having fun with it.
Yeah, and I think something else worth saying about it is a kind of a warning in a way is that, you know, it works really well with the right group. If you're with, particularly with family, with friends you know well, particularly if you're happy to laugh and joke at each other's expense a little bit, it really comes to life. It's not a convention game, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not a take it along and people you don't know and just crack it out, because you need relationship behind it, really. And there are some people that won't like it. You know, we've tested it with various groups. Often, you know, if they don't know each other well, or if they're kind of more background of kind of Euro gamers that aren't so keen on the kind of discussion and that sort of game, it can kind of fall quite flat. So just think about the group you're playing with. But as you've said, most families and game groups that know each other well, it goes on really well.
I think it does a really good job of displacing a game like Apples to Apples as a party voting game, because it's a lot more interesting. There's actually something going on, right?
Mm. Yeah.
Well, and what you're making the argument, you know, your argument and stating your case for is a lot more interesting.
Right. It's not just the reveal of the match and everybody laughs and then we move on. There's actually some kind of distorted, twisted, you know, comic book logic going on.
Yeah. And you end up, I mean, something else in the second edition that's going to be looked at and changed is that the rules about whether or not you can look stuff up when you're playing online on Google. Because you find yourself afterwards looking up, you know, oh, can cheetahs swim? Or, you know, how would an octopus walk backwards? Or, you know, these sorts of things we end up discussing. And whether or not you're allowed to look that up in the game can be a question. So there's going to be a clear definition at the start of whether or not you agree as a group to that you can look stuff up. I don't know whether you found, I guess you were probably, if you're playing as a family, you probably didn't, you just wouldn't. Going by your wits rather than looking stuff up on Google. But
mostly.
Mostly we're just tongue-in-cheek, totally being flat serious with our 8-year-old and seeing if he'd buy it. But there's a little bit of Calvin's dad, I think, in some of the negotiations.
A little bit.
All right, well, He is TC Tom Clare. He is the founder of Big Imagination Games, the designer of The Champion of the Wild. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Oh, guys, thank you so much for having me. It's been a real pleasure to chat to you. And I'm looking forward to digging into some of your previous podcasts because I've just discovered you guys.
All right. Yeah. Great. Awesome. Well, if people want to poke you online, what's the best way that they can get a hold of you?
The best way probably is to email me. So my email is tc@bigimaginationgames.com if you want to email me directly. I'm on Twitter as TCBIG, that's TEECE and then BIG, which is for Big Imagination Games. And we've got a Facebook page on, if you just type in Big Imagination Games UK, then you should find our Facebook page, and the website is championoftheworld.com.
So awesome. It'll all be in the show notes too, if anybody was looking for that and couldn't quite hear.
Yeah.
All of those will be in the show notes. There's lots of ways that you can get a hold of us too. Did you know that, dear?
I did know that. I better know it by now.
Right. The easiest way is on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at FamilyGamersAA.
Or you can join our Facebook community. Mm-hmm. Go to thefamilygamers.com/community is the easiest way to get there.
Right. We'll bring you right to Facebook and you can join up. And I noticed while we were doing this podcast, somebody was posting some photos to the community. So
it's
go check them out.
It's a nice
close-knit community. It's fun.
I'll be signing up to that just after we've hung up on the phone.
Well, there you go.
Fantastic. Of course, you can email us too.
Andrew@thefamilygamers.com.
Anitra@thefamilygamers.com. Please don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. Tell your friends about the podcast. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe to podcasts.
Right. And if you don't subscribe to podcasts, if you just listen to them when you can find them, you can find us on TuneIn, you can find us on Stitcher, you can find us on Spotify. We are everywhere.
Everywhere.
We're trying to be anyway.
And don't forget, you can also help us out by checking out our pod pledge.
Mm-hmm. thefamilygamers.com/pod pledge, and you can find out how to become part of the family.
Part of the family.
All right, well, whether you're on this side of the Atlantic Ocean or that side of the Atlantic Ocean, I think that's going to be it for us this week. So, until next week,
play games with your kids.